Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're bringing you a special edition from the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. We connected with House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson after a Farm Bill listening session at the event. Then, we spoke with Stephen Nicholson from Rabo about the farm economy, and United Soybean Chair Steve Reinhardt about where we can expect the record soybean crop to go around the globe. The Farm Progress Show is the largest outdoor farm event in the nation. Policymakers, economists, and farmer leaders told us this week that low commodity prices and high interest rates, paired with an ag trade deficit and lack of a new farm bill, are putting pressure on rural America. In other news, the ag trade deficit is expected to grow in fiscal year 2025, according to USDA's quarterly ag trade outlook released Tuesday. USDA is forecasting that U.S. ag imports will increase by $8 billion in fiscal year 2025 to $212 billion, pushing the projected trade deficit to $42.5 billion. Up from $30.5 billion deficit projected for fiscal year 24. The surge in inputs reflects consumer demand for fresh fruits and vegetables, as well as coffee, cocoa, and other products. The report underscores the weakness of the Chinese market for U.S. farmers. Exports to China are projected to drop $3 billion to $24 billion next year. The trade deficit has become something of a political football. Republicans say the Biden administration isn't doing enough to open new markets for U.S. agriculture. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says China is cutting back on purchases of U.S. commodities in retaliation for the criticism it's getting in rural America. USDA is going to allow field trials for vaccines that can protect cattle from avian flu. Groups representing dairy, egg, and turkey producers have been pushing USDA to move quickly on vaccines. The virus has been detected in 193 herds in 13 states since March, but its spread has slowed some in August. House Agriculture Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson spoke at a Farm Bill listening session during the Farm Progress Show in Iowa, alongside representatives from the Iowa delegation. He said the discussion centered on optimism for Farm Bill movement during September.
One of the main messages I wanted to share today was optimism. We're getting this done, we're going to get this Farm Bill done, and we're going to get it done sooner than later. This is not something that we can wait for the 119th Congress. Our farmers need it now. And the other thing, I think that was important to communicate is we were listening. You know, we've done this listening tours, probably 90 listening sessions, been in Iowa a number of times, 40 states, one territory. So some of those states multiple times, like Iowa. I want people to understand that, we listened when we came, because we wrote a farm bill that we did what I consider to be in a tripartisan way. It was Republicans and Democrats working together with the voices of rural America and with our number one industry, those in agriculture.
Congress will be back in session for just a short 3 weeks in September before the election. Will the Farm Bill reach the floor schedule?
Well, I've been working intensely, my team and I, with CBO, and they've come closer to us. We've really narrowed the gap of what is out there yet. I'd like them to come a little closer, because I'm not really interested in cutting back on any of the safety net programs out there, whether it's the new safety net programs that I added to, obviously on the farm side, or quite frankly, there's safety net programs I expanded for vulnerable populations within the nutrition title. CBO is come together close, more, and I'm working with individual members. We're counting the votes and seeing when we have that kind of have a robust vote that we can take it to the House floor. I think we need to do this before the election. My commitment, it's a robust commitment, and I'm going to work as hard as I can to make that happen. And leadership is very supportive, but there are a few those things I need to close the deal on.
And your optimism, of course, to get a farm bill on the floor in September is obvious from your session today. But John Thune, the Senate Republican whip, had said last week that he expects Congress to pass another one-year extension of the bill. Will Congress consider an extension of the 2018 bill in September, or how long will you wait until the end of the year to begin that discussion?
Well, we're going to need an extension, but it needs to be a short-term extension. I love Senator Thune, but he's completely wrong. What a blow that would be to the American farmer and rancher if we would just continue with the status quo because we're losing farms. Debt is amassing. Reference price or commodity prices are falling. So to continue to do for a year what we've been doing just spells doom and gloom for the American farmer and rancher. So he's absolutely correct. We need an extension, but it's a short-term extension, enough to allow the Senate time to do its job and for Senator Stabenow to lead over there. I think it helps when we'll pass our version out of the House of the Farm, Food, and National Security Act, and we deliver that to the Senate. They'll have something that I think is that they could get 60 votes for. It gives them something to work with.
We'll be right back with more from House Agriculture Committee Chair D.T. Thompson.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. A theme during the Farm Progress Show has been the challenging farm economy right now. We asked House Ag Committee Chair D.T. Thompson if there's a possibility for a supplemental or emergency funding bill to support farmers until a new farm bill with higher reference prices can be enacted.
Sometimes we're able to add things into the extension that are helpful. That's yet to be determined. But I don't want an extension that's long-term. I want us to do our job. And our job requires passing the farm bill and getting it to the president's desk so that we give the hope and the certainty that those hardworking families that provide us with fuel, food, and fiber, quite frankly, they deserve to have.
And if you don't have that new bill, would you support Secretary Vilsack using the CCC to provide some payments to farmers to compensate them for low commodity prices during this time when the farm economy is already struggling?
Well, I'm not sure there's going to be anything left in the CCC the way Secretary Vilsack's been tapping into it for all the unilateral programs that he's been handing this money out. So I'm not sure that would, the way that the CCC has really been utilized outside what I believe is what is allowable. Our farmers need help, but the best help they need is certainty. And that certainty comes by passing the farm bill and not doing some type of executive branch manipulation.
Let's think hypothetically here. Republicans win control of Congress in November. Could you pass the commodity title of this farm bill next year through the budget reconciliation process?
Yeah, that's possible. It could be in there, but I'm just coming right back to that the best pathway forward is to pass this farm bill, a five-year farm bill that provides absolute certainty to those hardworking families. I'm willing to look at, whether it's pre-conferencing, which we are starting to talk about, whether it's attaching it to some end of year legislation. Every farm bill has had its own unique journey. The most important part is though, we get this bill passed and whatever, attaching it or doing it whatever way that we are able to accomplish that.
Transition a little bit to the trade report released yesterday by USDA saying the ag trade deficit is going to grow again in fiscal year 2025. Given that, do you support former President Trump's proposal to raise tariffs further? One thing we've heard is that it could, make the ag trade deficit even worse.
Well, you have to remember under President Trump, there's been a lot of focus on what happened with China, but the list is huge of the number of countries that opened up agriculture trade with the United States of America under President Trump from 2016 through 2020. Now, it really hurt at the end, but that was COVID. So he really was able to accomplish that in, 2.5 years, 3 years. And so One of my inputs with the President Trump is that let's do our best to make sure we're working with other countries so that protecting against retaliatory tariffs on our agriculture commodities. I've shared that input. I think that's really important. I actually think it's immoral when in trade wars there's retaliatory tariffs are placed on your food supply and what you need to feed your nation. And I look forward to, I loved working with President Trump in 2016 to 2020, and I look forward to working with him again starting in 2025.
If these tariffs are enacted, will Congress step in and make payments to farmers to compensate for the impact of these new tariffs? Our farmers are, as we mentioned earlier, still struggling in this very difficult farm economy.
Well, I think the most important thing is that we have robust trade, that we open up new markets. And I think the most important step we did on that was actually doubling the foreign market development and the market access program. So I'm not looking to speculate that there'll be a tremendous negative impact of any kind of trade policy going forward. I think that we can benefit from expanded markets with finally having an administration back that is aggressive in terms of agriculture trade. We haven't had that for at least 2 years. We were missing the two most important positions, the chief agriculture negotiator at USTR and the undersecretary for foreign agriculture and trade. They were vacant, nobody at the table. That won't happen under Trump 47.
We'll be right back to discuss the farm economy with Rabo economist Stephen Nicholson.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Rabo economist Stephen Nicholson says high interest rates and low commodity prices makes for a difficult farm economy right now.
I think it's fair to say that we're in for 2 or 3 years of at least of kind of tougher times, profitability will be challenging. Interest rates are what they are. We can't change those. We'll have to live with that. But it's just farmers are going to have to think about the business, think about what makes money and what doesn't. And then go forward with that. It's just gonna be a challenging time.
Diving in, we're looking at a massive corn crop this year in a period of low commodity prices already. Have we bottomed out on prices, or can farmers expect more volatility in the future?
Well, I think there's gonna be more volatility for sure. I think that's the easy answer for that. But I have to tell you, I thought this had bottomed out, seemed like for the last 2 or 3 weeks, it just can't seem to find a bottom. Now, having said that, when you look at December corn on the board, that 390 area has been kind of pretty good support. So I think that's something we can kind of hang our hat on right now. And basis is going to do more of that work. And we've seen, the board's kind of flattened out a little bit. We've seen the basis levels continue to decline because the big supply is coming. It's coming to the marketplace. Beans has been a little more difficult to try to figure out where are we going to find the bottom in beans. The bean crop is getting, I think it looks like it's getting bigger. And that's a bit of a, I won't say a surprise, but we saw the Pro Farmer Tour. We've seen some other tours are showing bigger numbers than USDA put out in August.
You mentioned record high bean production as well. Where can we expect that going domestically and internationally?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of that's gonna go domestically in rising crush numbers, rising crush plants. So I think that's the good news. A lot of it's gonna stay here. But we still have the whole Chinese situation to deal with. That China's just not taking U.S. soybeans like they used to. And so we need to repair that relationship to be able to get that market back or get some more share of that market than we have right now. So, I think it's going to depend on who gets elected in the fall and how that relationship goes forward. So we'll have to just wait and see.
And we, in our election coverage, have covered a lot of ethanol, biofuel, policy, and sustainable aviation fuel. From your perspective, and from what you know about each administration's potential policies, you know, which would be more favorable for that biofuel policy?
Yeah, and the current administration, the Biden administration, and, you know, potentially the Harris administration, I think at least would be more favorable, and I put that in quotes in the sense they're, you know, they've said they want to support biofuels. I think they see it as a transition to EVs. That's sort of the bad news of that policy. You know, the former president, we knew how that worked in his former administration. You know, he wasn't necessarily a friend of biofuels. You know, his loyalties and his friends are in the fossil fuel industry. We saw all those small refinery exemptions. That was a challenge to the ethanol industry for sure. So I'm a little skeptical. I think that a new Trump administration would be any more friendly to biofuels than it was in the first time round. But I think the one thing I think about too is ethanol is flat, of course. You know, biodiesel is declining. Renewable diesel is still growing. You still have demand for renewable diesel. And it seems like it would be a good thing for Farm Belt states to adopt low carbon fuel standards to encourage renewable diesel, because we use a lot of diesel out here. That would be good for the bean market and bean oil prices, obviously. And then, you know, SAF, certainly both whether it's an alcohol to jet or whether it's a feedstock as in vegetable oil, would also be good for agriculture. I think, you know, U.S. agriculture and Corn Belt needs to really adopt that. We've seen that in Illinois. We've seen that in Minnesota. We need to get that widespread to help the demand for our products out here.
And it's obviously challenging economic for farmers to make large capital investments like equipments right now. What investments are being made by farmers in rural America for a high return on investment without such massive financial investment?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I think we're seeing a little more, you know, they're certainly pulling in. We've seen that on machinery, obviously. But I do think that farmers are looking particularly at new technology. You know, what can they bolt onto that current machinery that they could use to make that farm more efficient? So it's really, if you're selling something to farmers, it has to be a value proposition. What do we do to make that farm more efficient? Whether it's at the financial level, whether it's in the production level, what do we do better? Even in the marketing level, what do we do to be more efficient than we are right now? And I think that's where farmers will make that investment. We sort of joke a little bit, a lot of investment has been made in the new shops in the last 4 or 5 years, and we see those finishing up. But, you know, it's really a value proposition. What is the value that that purchase brings to the farm?
We'll be right back to discuss where the record soybean crop may go around the globe with United Soybean Chair Steve Reinhardt right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. The U.S. is projected to produce a record soybean crop this year. Steve Reinhardt, United Soybean Chair, says trade has been a top priority for the group.
And July, we had our board meeting in Baltimore, and in Baltimore, we had a discussion of trade. Of course, trade is one of our big platforms that we invest soybean checkoff, farmer checkoff dollars in, and trying to get that whole soybean meal and sometimes even some oil out of the United States abroad. And it was an interesting meeting we had in Baltimore because of the Francis Key Scott Bridge. That was hit, and that ship actually contained 40 containers of soybeans, headed to smaller, newer markets that we're trying to build, you know, over time. And it takes a lot of time to build a market, especially when we're looking at a developing country versus a country like China, where they've been a long time a historical partner, and we're able to ship in a lot of soybeans for them to work with their livestock industry in that particular country.
And looking at the trade space in particular, who's been, you know, a good trading partner for U.S. soy, and what markets are you looking to expand to in the future?
Yeah, so I think one of the some of the markets we're looking to expand to are in Southeast Asia. So as we look at the Soy Connects, USEC, the United Soybean Export Council, just held their Soy Connects program in San Francisco. And we had a lot of buyers come in from Southeast Asia. And so, for example, one of the first times we're going to have soybean meal going to Vietnam, which is a big market we're continually trying to develop.
Let's dive into that demand a little bit further. You mentioned soybean meal being in demand and that changing. How on an international scale has demand for different soy products changed?
Well, I think a lot of countries in the past have liked whole soybeans because they can actually crush the soybeans themselves and use the meal and the oil for the different things that they want to, use that product for. I think one of the things we're able to try to instill in them now that we can ship them a high quality meal and they don't have to go through that labor intensive process of unloading a shipload of soybeans and then crushing the beans and then, extracting the meal from any oil. And then, so it's a more readily product that they can unload and basically ship out into the countryside.
And you mentioned China as a trading partner. What does your trading relationship of soy with U.S.-China look like now, and how do you anticipate that changing in the future?
Yeah, so China is still our biggest trading partner when we talk about soybeans, and so we want to make sure we continue that relationship. At the Soy Connects conference last week, we did have a delegation from China came over, and we had a good conversation with them on how we need to keep agriculture, maybe above some of the geopolitical things that are going on around the world. And, there is a need for protein and for people to be fed. And so that's, what his message was to us. And we want to continue to be that supplier. And the one thing that we can supply is we can supply a high quality soybean that was produced sustainably. And if sustainability is their concern, we're the market for that option.
Very good. And diving a little bit deeper into renewable diesel, where have you seen demand both here in the U.S. and internationally for that product?
Yeah, so right now the biodiesel has been the biggest demand for U.S. soybeans. We're having a little bit of difficulty right now with the CARB standards coming out of California and maybe putting a limit on the amount of soybean oil that can go into renewable or biodiesel in the future. And now we also have an issue with used cooking oil coming in from other destinations by ship into California, meeting a carbon index score for used oil that we can't meet with virgin soybean oil. But we don't know where that cooking oil is coming from. We don't know if it's used cooking oil. For instance, it could be palm oil. But the bottom line is, if we're trying to produce a sustainable product, which we are with renewable diesel or biodiesel, if they're using a product that's not sustainable from its production, they don't have a sustainable product at the end.
And what action has U.S. Soy taken to, verify where that's coming from and take action?
Sure. So through a partnership standpoint, what we're doing is trying to understand more the relationship with the CARB standards and what to use cooking oil is, what effect that has on our markets. We're looking at We're assuming now we're at about $1.50 to the soybean price that we've lost on the Board of Trade because of the used cooking oil coming into the country. And we're going to continue to study that issue. And if there's any other action that needs to be taken, we have our partners at the American Soybean Association.
We'll be back with more from the Farm Progress Show right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The farm income forecast will be released on Thursday next week. Congress will remain in recess until September 9th. When they return to D.C., both chambers will be in session for 3 consecutive weeks before a month-long recess in October before the election. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.